Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Leaf Flag, the aftermatch podcast of the LFC Red Poets. Tonight, we look back at a disappointing result for Liverpool at Old Trafford this afternoon when the game ended up in a 2-2 draw in a game that Liverpool should have had to put to bed by half time but didn't. And to look back on the 100 minutes or so that was played, I'm your host, Les Lawson, and I'm joined by Tom Keegan and Pete Warburton. So, Tom, I'll start with you. The team was announced around about 2:30, and it was as we very much expected, except that Connor got the nod to play right back, and I think a surprise to us all was that Quans got the nod alongside Virgil.
Yeah, I think Peter called that one there the other day. He called it like he thought Quans would play. I think he was spot on as well. I thought Conor Bradley or Joe Gomez would start on afterwards. I thought about it later. But overall, you look at the team, it was more than enough to beat them today. And I think, you know, overall, when the team dropped, you know, like I was really confident going into the game, Les. I was really nervous. I don't know. I don't usually get as nervous as I do. I think it's because it's Jürgen's last season, and I so desperately want him to win the league. And I think I was a little bit nervous before the game, but overall, I was made up with this team that we put out. I thought it was more than enough to beat them.
Pete, I think you got the team right, didn't you? From what you what you said the other night, I think it was a. I think it was every player you picked, you got right. You went for, you didn't have Joe Gomez in the starting 11, and you went for, you know, Connor and Kwanzaa at the back. So, well done for that. So the team wasn't a total shock to you because that's the one you predicted.
Yeah, I've still got the notepad in front of me, and yet it is as I predicted. Maybe. As I say, with the likes of Konate, maybe two games sometimes in a week, and he took a clout at the end of the Sheffield United game, didn't he? Which went unpunished, actually. I think it did anyway. Yeah, so I sort of got it spot on the team, and like Tom says, I was nervous. I'm in every game now. I'm going to be a nervous wreck because it's this time of the season, and although I thought that team was good enough to beat United, yeah, the nerves were certainly there. Well, we'll talk about why we didn't beat United later on in the programme. But yeah, on paper, you looked at them against United, and I think they had a young kid come in at centre-back who hadn't played at Old Trafford before, and because they had a few injuries, and he just thought our front three would have enough to get at them. But yeah, so on paper, yeah, I was quite happy with the team he picked.
The bench was strong as well, Tom, and you actually thought, didn't you, that you know, if the players in the starting 11, you know, weren't up to doing the job, you'd have tools from the bench that you could bring on that maybe give you a better options than last time. You know, when we played them in the FA Cup a few weeks ago. But I must admit, I did have a wry smile to myself after, you know, they made quite a quick start as expected, United. You know, in the first 10 minutes or so, they had a goal rightly ruled out for offside when Liverpool sloppily give the ball away and they broke on us and they just got the pass wrong and Garnacho was offside. But what gave me my right smile, I was thinking of you because you were in fulsome of praise of Anthony Taylor last week and when he refereed the, you know, the City v Arsenal game, saying how refreshing it was to see a referee keep his cards in his pockets. Yet today, the first challenge by a Liverpool player, and out comes his yellow card.
Yeah, I doubt the irony was not lost on me there, Les. I must admit, I thought he was fussy for most of the day, and I think later on in the game, I hate talking about referees. You know, like I said to you tonight, I'd rather talk about football than you mean you, Peter. We talk football because that's what they're there for. It's about the players. But like always, every podcast, there's a piece about a referee. I thought he was inconsistent. compared to what he'd done last week. And I thought, you know, like I was really disappointed in the way he booked Conor Bradley. You know, like I'll go on later about about Casemiro, like, but so yeah, from that point of view, I don't think it was his best ever game, but hey, we from Withenshaw, 6 miles down the road, so who knows?
Yeah, but they did make the better start, didn't they, Tom?
I expected that, though, Les, to be honest. Yeah. They've got nothing to lose. And as Ali said to me as we were watching, it's their cup final. You would expect them to come out flying because they've got nothing to lose. But we cut them open within the first 5 or 6 minutes. You know, for the five minutes that they had the ball and they had the early starts, it wasn't long before we were carving them open, you know. But
yeah,
we move on to that.
Yeah, supposedly Pete had a really good chance and really good play by Liverpool. And to be fair, I thought he did everything right. He lifted it, you know, and the keeper, to be fair, made a really decent save. You know, I know he's had a fair bit of stick this season, that keeper, and he's not, you know, in my opinion, he's not, you know, a particularly decent standard, but that was a decent save. And I wouldn't fault really suppose too much for that miss, because as I said, you know, I thought he'd basically done everything right.
I think the main thing is, as any striker or anyone taking a shot, is to make the goalkeeper work, and he did. I suppose in hindsight, watching the replay, because he saved that, I thought maybe he should have gone low and tried to make the keeper either make a save with his feet or get down, you know, to the corner. But he did the right thing in the fact that he made the keeper make the save. And I wouldn't say it was a world-class save, but it was a good save, and he got a strong hand to it. But, yeah, I think the only thing I'd say in hindsight is maybe if he did it along the deck, it might have made the keeper struggle a bit more. But, yeah, we, you know, like you say, the first 10 minutes or so, I mean, Conor Bradley got the yellow after 7 minutes. So you're thinking, right, he's walking a tightrope now. And for the first, you know, the first sort of 10, 12 minutes, they had a go at us. Like, you know, you'd expect when you go to Old Trafford, they always expect them to come out against us. And then little by little, we did get our feet on the ball. McAllister in the midfield started controlling things. And from then on till really towards half time, it was sort of one-way traffic, and it was pretty comfortable after that.
Yeah, Liverpool were well on top at that point, Tom. And, you know, United, you know, later in the half, they have an effort that goes straight across, you know, the our sort of 6-yard box. But I think it was well defended by Liverpool that they couldn't, you know, they made sure that the defenders got the bodies, you know, ahead of the United attackers, so they weren't able to get near the ball. But apart from that, you know, they weren't a threat, United. But chance after chance after chance was coming for Liverpool. And yet again, we were getting the final ball wrong. And then when we did get the final ball right, the forwards, particularly Mo Salah, was getting his finishing all wrong.
Yeah, I think that was one of the frustrating things, wasn't it, Les? The chances that we was creating. I think the first one was it? I can't remember. It was it Nunes who played it across to Salah, but he played it behind him, or it was it Diaz? I know one of the two played it behind him, and so he sort of had to go back to get the shot, and he never really got the shot off properly. And it was the first of many for Mo, unfortunately, today. Like, but I thought that. I wasn't worried at that stage, though, Les, because early on, you know, that you thought, like, we can't keep creating chance after chance after chance after chance and not putting one of these chances away. Do you know, because we, as you say, we were playing. The chances were every 2 or 3 minutes, where they were coming constantly and quickly.
Yeah, that's right, they were. And eventually, Pete, we got a corner. There was a lovely flick on from Darwin and a really good finish from Luis Diaz. you know, to put us deservedly one up. And then you're thinking then, well, come on, let's just now go and get the second one and put this to bed, because yours had the feeling if you went two up, then it was more likely to go 3-4 than 2-1.
Yeah, sort of agree with what Tom said. We were creating openings, and just the final ball let us down. It was either it was either behind players or not enough pace on the ball, or it was over hit. And to be honest, I was starting to get frustrated early on, because I said to our Jack, I said, I don't want another game like the Cup game where we create it all the time and not put chances away. And then we got the goal on 23 minutes, and you think, well, that's going to keep us, you know, not steady us, because we weren't really out of kilter, to be honest, but at least have that goal advantage and then just be more precise. Just be more precise when the chances come. And it was a well-taken goal. I mean, I think the keeper got his hands to it, but it was well-taken. And I think Maynou, they were blaming on the telly for not following Diaz in. But, Darwin gets the header on, as he's done a few times this season. And it was similar to a goal I think Jota scored. I'm trying to remember who it was against. It might have been Brentford, but Nunes got the header on. And Diaz put it away. But you just wanted them to go on from that. And they were in a comfortable position, Liverpool. And they, as I say, they had the majority of the possession. And all you could see, like Tom said, there was more goals coming our way. They just had to, you know, buy the time if you want and pick the right pass. And unfortunately, for whatever reason, we started wasting chances again, as we did in the Cup game. So to go in at 1-0 half-time was a bit disappointing, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, Tom, Mo could have had a hat-trick in the first half. He did. I mean, I don't know about you, and I don't know whether, you know, I and a few other people are being a little bit, you know, too overcritical with him. But that what we used to call the typical Mo finish, where he used to get it on the left-hand side and bend it into the top corner of the opposite side of the goal, they don't seem to be happening anymore. Well, not as often as they did. He used to score them with regularity, didn't we, when he was in his prime? I mean, he had one that Onana really sort of made the real meal of the save and put it out for a corner. It was right at him. It wasn't a difficult save at all. He had another opportunity which he ballooned over into the Stretford end. And it's just so unlike Mo, and that was just continuing his wastefulness from, you know, last week's game against Brighton, when he had numerous chances and, you know, wasted them. And in the end, you know, he redeemed himself by scoring from a lovely pass from McAllister last week. But this week, I just thought he was particularly wasteful in front of goal.
Yeah, I think for the last couple of weeks, Les, since he's come back from injury, I think he's lacked composure, hasn't he? You know, like you would back your house after time when he got through, you know, into these situations where he's got, you know, like he's got the time and the space to try and pick his spot. And, you know, like 7 out of 10 times he does and he puts them away. But like, I don't know, as you say, you don't want to be overcritical and like pick on him, like, because he's been an absolute superstar for Liverpool, you know, like, and still puts in really good performances off the ball. But I think as a premium goal scorer, I think as he's getting older, he's starting to not take the chances, you know, like, these are big chances today, you know, like chances that you would have backed. And it's not just him. I can throw the same accusation about Nunes as well. Total lack of composure when he got into a position to, you know, to score. I think it's more frustrating, isn't it? I think as Peter said, like, we're sitting here today and we're sitting and we're thinking, we've had 29 shots on target, but we needed a penalty to save a point.
Yeah. You know, I mean, a lot of you know, as Tom says there, you know, we're still talking about the first half, Pete, but we're creating so many chances and we're breaking on them. You know, Nico, Connor Bradley goes down the the right hand side, you know, and cuts the ball across. And I think Nunes dummies in, and Lucho can't get his shot away properly. It's blocked. You have other one which, you know, Szoboszlai is bursting through, and he decides to play a ball to Connor rather than having a shot. You know, Mo gets in and gets the pass wrong. You know, and it was, as you said, it was becoming really, really frustrating. You know, and I know we'll come on to it in the end, but, you know, everybody was hinting at it, the commentators, and you, I'm sure I was sitting there thinking about it, and I'm sure you lads were as well, that, you know, we needed a second goal to kill the game off, because, you know, while it was 1-0, it'd just take a bit of a lack of concentration or a bit of brilliance, and you know, all of a sudden, you know, you're finding your lead's gone. But we just couldn't get that second goal before half time, could we, Pete?
Yeah, it's like I said before, there were passes were either under hit or they were just, the decisions were just the wrong decision. I mean, you mentioned the one where Conor Bradley got sort of around the back, but even his cross into the box was under hit. And that sort of meant Nunes, it was behind him rather than in his path. So Nunes sort of dummies it for Diaz, and by the time he gets to him, it's run out of steam in that. And like you say, with, you know, with chances with Salah and Szoboszlai, I mean, some of the shots Szoboszlai has put in this season have been rockets. And he's 20 yards from goal, and yet trying to pick the way through a minefield, to be honest, instead of just putting the laces through. I mean, we saw what happens when, in the last game at home against Sheffield United, what happens when you put your laces through a ball and at least buy a ticket for the lottery and have a good, you know, make the goalkeeper work. And even our Jack said to me, he said at half time, he said, they're playing like Arsenal used to play a few years ago, trying to score the perfect goal. And sometimes, you know, it is down. I know you were using the C word, weren't you? I think it's another C word. I think it's concentration at times. And I just think sometimes, you know, I'm trying to figure out why they've got to score this perfect goal all the time. Just have a go and put your foot through it. And we got into so many situations in the first half, especially, where all you had to do, and it's easy to say sitting in the living room watching it on the telly, but just pick the right pass or take a shot on the goal. And in the end, we just overcook things too much. And then, you know, United come back and sort of get people behind the ball and that. And it, as I say, even at 1-0 at half time, I was really frustrated the fact that we weren't game over, to be honest.
Tom, can I ask you a question? And I'm playing a little bit of devil's advocate here. And I'm really, to those who are listening, I'm really not sort of having a go at Mo Salah here, because this probably isn't his fault. But you think, take your mind back to when he was out of the team. And it just seems to me sometimes that when he is in the team, the players automatically look for him to play the pass who's the more likely player to score. Yet when he wasn't in the team, you know, they just play it to the best available player in a particular position to score a goal. If you think about it, when he wasn't in the team, you know, we scored four at Bournemouth, four at home to Chelsea. You know what I mean? And people were saying that was our best performance of the season. And Jota, you know, Jota was on fire. And I'm just saying, sometimes you think that it's just automatic. And the point I'm trying to get to is that, you know, when Ronaldo come back to Manchester United, they would automatically look to him all the time. And he would get a bag full of goals. And to people that look and think, look how many goals Ronaldo scores. It can't be his fault why United are going through, you know, a bit of a barren period because he's still scoring goals. But sometimes the player have got to forget that Mo is there and think, right, there's another player in a better position. We don't always have to look for him.
Do you know what? I want to answer this question for very, very quickly. You know, which is a bit of a change for me. You know, If you're asking me, were we a better balanced side when Jota and Thinho was in the team? And the answer to that is, yeah, I think we were. I think they worked differently as a three. And that's not demeaning Mo or they're taking away anything from Mo. But I do agree with what you're saying. I think we look for Mo all the time. And he expects us to look for him. You know, and I think sometimes that's been a bit of a problem. You know, it's been brilliant over the years because it's worked and it's been fantastic. But as he's lost that yard of pace, although he's a clever footballer and some of the balls he plays have been immaculate. He's been, you know, like creating goals. I've been down to this world. But I think today, had Jota played today, I think Liverpool would have won the game. And I know a lot of people are going to say, but that hindsight's a wonderful thing. But I think Jota finished. He's more of a clinical finisher than anybody else at the club. And I think we needed a really cool head with one of them chances. And I think Jota probably is a better bet for the team, for the balance of the team. Now, I know I'll get a lot of stick for that, but there you go.
What do you make of that, Pete, the question I asked Tom?
I actually said, after the game, rather than at half-time, I said to Jack, if we'd have had a Robbie Fowler in that team, we'd have scored a hat-full today. And he said, we have, Dad, but he's injured, and it's Jota. And I totally agree with what Tom says. That's not to have a go at Mo. I think the other players in the team have got to realise, because they're all guilty of it, it's not a one-man band, and they've got to take a little bit of responsibility on as well. Like I say, when Szoboszlai's charging forward 20 yards from goal, some of the shots he's put in this season, why are you looking for a little 3-5 yard pass into the box where it's congested? So I can understand. I mean, for what Mo's done for us over the years, it's hard to have any slice against him. But today, the finishing was poor. And I think it's not just down to him. I think it is down as a collective. But the players, I mean, there were a couple of occasions Nunes got into great positions and he either overrun the ball or once again he chose to try and pass it, you know, overpass it in the box. And as I say, I think some of them chances we created today and in the cup game 3 weeks ago, I think if Jota had been on the pitch, I think we'd have won handsomely, to be honest.
So, Tom, we go in a half-time, 1-0 ahead. And, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm totally, although I'm happy that we're ahead, I'm disappointed that we're not further ahead, because you're thinking, right, we've got another 45 minutes plus whatever the officials decide to add on at the end. You know, to keep our nose in front here and get back to the top of the table. But it would have been nice to have that cushion, because my mind was going back to the FA Cup game, where again we were ahead of half time. But again, you know, we couldn't get that third goal to kill them off. And you know, so was that in the back of your mind as well?
Yeah, it most certainly was. I think I was hoping that we'd come out. I thought Jürgen would have a go at them. He'd sort of organise them and make the few, you know, like tactical changes, which would make us more, you know, more ruthless in front of goal. But again, we come out and I'd said to the lads, I was with me two lads, and I texted our Paul, John, and he's saying, you know, Liverpool. This Liverpool side, although they're brilliant and they're coming back, their ability to come back from a defeat to rescue points and to win points has been amazing this season. But you'd always get the feeling that we're going to give teams a couple of chances. And that's what I was thinking during the game. I was thinking, you know, we badly need a second goal, because you're going to give these a chance and they're going to score, whether it be, as you said before, whether it be by a mistake or by a bit of brilliance, you know that they're going to get one chance during that game. And you know, like, so you're always on edge. So the longer it went on in the second half, again, you know, more of the same. Yeah, except again, it was more frequent, wasn't it? You know, there was more chances created. And like, and then it becomes like a panic, as Peter said, where we're trying to pass the ball through a congested area. You know, like, you're never going to, you know, like, you're never going to play the ball through, you know, like a packed four, five, six players to get to, you know, to score. I think we just lost our way. Yeah, I think we get become more frustrated the longer the game went on that we hadn't scored.
Pete, Tom's right there, isn't it? The start of the second half, we're just totally and utterly in control of the game. So much so that Gary Neville, on his comments, he says that, you know, people are saying this is going to be Liverpool's most difficult game at the run-in. This is going to be the easiest. And just as he says that, Kwanzaa, who's under no pressure, just totally under hit to pass to Virgil, when he's not even being pressed. And the ball goes to Fernandes, and you have to give him credit and say it's an incredible finish, you know, from where he was. But the fact that it was just like it just come from when we were under absolutely zero pressure at all, it's so frustrating, isn't it? And, you know, Tom hit the nail on the head there when he said, you know, you always feel as though you're going to give the opposition a chance. And if you think back to the last two games, you know, we had 80-odd% possession against Sheffield United. We're in total control of the game. And then they get one little break on Wednesday night. And all of a sudden, you know, you're at 1-1 with about 20-odd minutes to go. And you're thinking, you know, where's this come from? Okay, we end up winning that game 3-1. But we're again putting ourselves in that position, aren't we, to, you know, where we're having to sort of, you know, force ourselves to win the game that we're already in control of.
Yeah, and it was all the more galling. I mean, if Kwanzaa had been pressed by, say, Rashford or Hoyland or something, and he was hurried into a pass, but it was so frustrating that there was just no pressure, and there was no need to even go square. I think he had grass in front of him; he could have taken it on a bit, and I think they just seem to get in this mindset sometimes, Liverpool, of saying, you know, I don't mind us having possession football and controlling it, but when you bring something on like that yourself, and as I say, you know, he wasn't under pressure in any way that I can remember, and he just played a stupid square ball. Well, it wasn't a stupid ball, it was just that he underhit the pass once again. And yeah, in fairness to Fernandes, although I hate him, he controlled the shot. While I was talking, I just had a message off one of my mates, and he said over three games this season against United, we've had 90 shots and we've only scored 5. And he also said, I've never seen a Liverpool team dominate United as much as we did today. I think in the first half, I think United didn't have a shot on target. I think we had something like 14 shots, not on target, but it's 14 shots. They had 0. That was the dominance we had. And yet we still come out for the start of the second half, like Tom said, thinking we might give these a sniff here. And it's just, we're so wasteful in front of goal at times. And it's probably going to be ironic on Thursday when we play Atalanta. We might score a bagful against them. And you know, we always have this saying, don't we, as Liverpoolians, we say, well, someone's going to get it soon. The number of chances we create, we're going to get a hatful against someone. But these are the games where you want to take your chances, because especially with the running now, we've got 7 games left, I think, haven't we? Yeah. I mean, it's not a total disaster. We're still level on points, but now it's out of our hands, and we should have been well over the finishing line today after 70 minutes. But yeah, it was just galling to give that goal away, and then it gave United a little bit of a fillip, didn't it? And they started actually playing without really pressing us too much. They were putting a couple of crosses in that Kelleher did well, not because they were vital saves, but it was those crosses where if somebody gets ahead to it and diverts the ball, it makes you look stupid. But he kept his concentration, and then I thought, let's just get a foothold in the game again. But they went on. I mean, the second goal was a bit of a wonder goal, to be honest. But similar to the goal that Macedo scored against Aston Villa in the top corner. But once again, when you look at a replay of that, between the lines, he was afforded so much space in the middle of the park. I can't remember who picked it up. I think it could have been in to start with. But there were like two banks of sort of a four and a three for Liverpool. And there was like a 15, 20-yard gap, and they were just in the space. And I could see Klopp going absolutely nuts on the line. And it was so disappointing to give two stupid goals away, to be honest.
Yeah, Tom, it was so frustrating, wasn't it, for that mistake by Quans. Just sort of under no pressure, a pass across under hit. Fernandes did brilliantly, as I said, to score from there. I mean, even Kells isn't expected to do that because he stood, in a good position for the keeper, really, on the edge of the box, just in case they want to play it back to him. You know what I mean? And he's not expecting a shot to come in from the halfway line. And we're just about to make a double substitution at that point. With Joe Gomez ready to come on, and also Curtis Jones. And you think to yourself, why are we in this position now? Where we just find ourselves level when they haven't really done anything to create a chance. We've created it for them. And then, as Pete said, not only that, but after they'd scored, within a few minutes, we find ourselves 2-1 down. It was a great finish from the young lad. But, Curtis Jones is hanging back. He doesn't come out to try and block the shot. He doesn't put him under any pressure. It's just there on the edge of the box, as Pete said. Jürgen is going berserk at this point.
Do you know what, Phil? I'll go start with Jurrell's mistake first, lads. He turned blind, didn't he? And he, realistically, once he's turned blind, he's made his mind up he's not going to play it back to Kelleher. So he plays it across without looking. So he doesn't see Fernandes at all. Plays it right into him. By that time, Kelleher's got to try and make his way back. And now, to be fair to Kelleher, he was unlucky there. He was close to actually saving that, to be fair to the lad,
I mean, if he had to save it, he'd have been outside the box, I think. So he'd have been
I
sent off.
was going to say, I think he'd have been off if they saved it.
Do you
I thought
think?
he was outside.
Yeah. I don't know. When I look back at, I see him, he was really close to it. I didn't look to see whether he was in or out. I was just panic stricken at that stage as it went in. But to be honest, we lost our way then, didn't we? It was like for the next five or 10 minutes, we just looked lost. We made the two substitutions, and then although we said Curtis come on the other night and he'd done well with the cameo, he did well when he come on. I think today you realise that footballers that, like when they're coming back from injury, they need match sharpness, because I think the pace of the game got to Curtis today. He was not as efficient as he normally is. He would have well closed him down. But you've got to, as Peter said, you've got to give the lad credit. He took it well, as you say. If you buy a ticket in the raffle, that you can score, and he certainly did. Then we found ourselves in this absolutely crazy position where we've gone from being in total control of a game to 2-1 down. It was like, and everybody who was sitting where we were watching it today in this club was in total shock, literally just dumbfounded. To, as Peter had said, to be, and let's be brutally honest, that's the worst Man United side I've ever seen. And that's saying something compared to the side that went down. They had, decent players in that side that went down, maybe over the top, but we were just the architects of our own downfall at that stage, where we were put in the position.
Yeah, then we continued to press, and we created, as you hinted before, we created a chance where, you know, we broke again. It was another five on two situation, Pete, this time led by, you know, Szoboszlai. You know, and the ball eventually gets played to Nunes, and I thought that the pass again was the wrong pass, and Nunes should have pulled it back and it's across the face of goal, and there's nobody there to put it in. And we just continue to sort of miss chances, and then, you know, Jürgen then put on Cody and Harvey and took off Endo and Nunes. And I actually thought it was the wrong decision to take Nunes off. I'll be honest with you, I'd have took Mo off, because Mo was just totally ineffective. I never thought today, I know he scored the penalty, and we'll come on to that later, but from open play, I just never thought today that Mo would actually create anything or score today from open play.
Yeah, well, he had that chance with about 10 to go, didn't he? Where I think Luis Diaz had a shot, and Onana got down, and from the rebound, you're putting your house on Mo, just knocking it in, and he blazed it over the bar with, you know, with his right foot, and you just thought then 10 minutes ago that might have been the chance to get us level, and it was like you say, it was just frustrating, you know. We had some nice play in the middle of the park. I mean, McAllister was pulling all the strings again. He was just so good in possession, and he wasn't flustered in any way. He just did his job, the right way. But then when we got into the final third, it's just that decision making all the time. And I mean, the more the game went on, the more frustrated I became. And it was just, I won't tell you what I was shouting at the telly, because we might do another podcast after. But I was really angry that it was just the decisions we were making, the poor decisions and the poor passes. And like you say, or Tom might have said, these are the poor United side. By United standards, these aren't a good team. And we should have seen, I mean, I watched them against Brentford last week. How the hell they got a draw at Brentford, I'll never know. They nearly snuck a win, because for 90 minutes, more or less, they were second best. And then they sneaked up and got a goal. Mason Mount scored. And then at least Brentford got something out of it with the draw. But these aren't a good side at all. And that's three games, as I say, this season where we pummel them, to be honest. And we should have won all three games.
Yeah, Tom. I thought both Harvey Elliott and Cody Gakpo made a better impact than Curtis Jones did when they come on from the bench today. I mean, Cody was having a right go, breaking forward in one attack, and he got completely taken out. And then Harvey was the one who you actually thought was going to actually create you something with, you know, with a nice pass. And eventually, you know, he got brought down for the penalty. And I know everybody knows that I'm not a big fan of Mo Salah taking penalties, and I still maintain that he shouldn't have took it. But it was one of the best penalties that he's taken when he put us level. But you know, then you've got about 10 minutes, including injury time or plus injury time, you know, to try and get that winning goal. And I just want to ask you, while I'm on the subject, there was a decision that Anthony's got to be one of the worst free kicks I've ever seen given against anybody, where he gives it for a foul on that Manu on the edge of the box by McAllister, when Manu blocks the ball and just slides down, and McAllister wasn't within a foot of him.
Yeah, that was a bizarre incident, wasn't it? You know, again, like, you know, again, he was looking at that stage, you know, like to give a free kick. I thought it was absolutely ridiculous. You know, like, Manu hurt himself by tackling McAllister. It was the other way around, you know, like, but then he plays the free kick, he gives them a free kick and lets them on. Totally agree with you. I thought, you know what we were talking about before, I thought Darwin Núñez should have scored from that, Les. No, you said he pulled it back. I think that was I thought he should have scored.
I thought he was placed too wide. I thought it was a terrible pass to him. And he was sort of wide at the goal, I thought, like, and I thought the goalkeeper and there was a defender sort of. So I thought the only option he had was to put it across the face of the goal, but he still pulled it back.
He just another chance when you're looking and you're thinking, you know, from then that then. But as you said, I think Harvey Elliott come on and like so many times this season, you know, like he's lifted the team. It comes to something when it takes a 21-year-old lad or just turned 21 the other day, comes on and changes, you know, the pattern of the play. He gives us something fresh. I thought we'd lost direction. I thought we'd lost our shape. I just thought we just look lost. And yet there's this 21-year-old kid comes on and drives the team, you know, with McAllister in the middle, and you're thinking, well, you know, so he has not come on, Harvey, this season. And like what the work he done for the penalty, it was a dead set penalty. Even Taylor could not give that. You know what I mean? I think he gave it more or less right away, to be honest, Les. I think it was a certain penalty. There was no doubt about it. Even Man United didn't object to it, to be fair. But like you said, I think Gakpo was driving forward and like trying to push us on. I agree with what you said. I wouldn't have took Nunes off, as bad as he was, you know, like as but he was a threat. Whereas I think Mo, you could tell it wasn't his day. And do you know what? I want to tell you something. Nearly every person in the club where we were sitting watching this game said the same thing. They all stood up. A couple of people couldn't watch when Mo picked the ball up for the penalty when they seen him take it off McAllister. And like, I must admit, I was looking at the lads and thinking to myself, you know what? I said to Ali and Kevin, I said, you know what? I'm not sure. On the day-to-day that he's had, I must admit, I was a bit nervous. But fair play to him, as you said, it was an excellent penalty. Probably the only thing he'd done on the day, to be fair to him, you know.
It was a good penalty, wasn't it, Pete, by most standards? One of the better ones that he'd taken, to be honest. But I have to admit that I wasn't confident when he stepped up that he was actually going to do the business and score, because I'm never confident when Mo steps up to take a penalty, to be honest. I wanted McAllister to take it. I don't know how you were feeling. But
I saw Macca with the ball. It seems to be a trait now, not just Liverpool, most teams. They'll have someone standing on the penalty spot with the ball, and at the last minute, someone out, whether it's something to try and throw the goalie off the scent or something. But
I think it's to stop them, the defending team, scuffing the penalty spot, to be honest.
Possibly, but it seems to be that whoever has hold of the ball doesn't necessarily take the penalty. They pass it on at the last second. And when I saw them give the ball to Mo, I was on the same team as you two, and I thought, me and our Jack said he couldn't even watch it. He said it's so big a penalty. In all honesty, Les, I didn't think it was that good a penalty. If Onana had gone to his right, I think he'd have saved it comfortably. It wasn't tucked away in the corner. But maybe give Mo some credit. Maybe he saw the keeper move, and that made him. He did move a bit early, the keeper, so maybe Mo saw that, and he didn't have to be as precise. But I didn't think it was it wasn't like stuck away right in the corner. But, you know, that was like 84 minutes. And you think, right, with injury time and that, we've got 10 minutes here to have a go at them. And in fairness, I mean, into injury time, Luis Diaz had a fantastic chance and he blazed it over the bar. It was a knockdown. And I think United were appealing for a foul. But when you looked at the replay, there was hardly any contact. But VAR being VAR, if we had a score, there'd have been a big debate, and he'd have probably chalked it off, in fairness. But I didn't think it was a foul at all. But I think Anthony was a bit embarrassed at the far post that he didn't get near it, and he tried to make out he'd been fouled. But I think Luis Diaz should have stuck that away. It was instinctive, the shot, but it flew over the bar, and you were just praying for him to keep it down. And that was the last chance, really. And, you know, but
Well, Harvey had an attempt, didn't he, from the...
That's right, yeah. Sorry, Harvey Elliott had a shot, snapshot, didn't he, right? That was the final act, really.
Yeah.
And but like you say, I totally agree. When Harvey Elliott and Gakpo come on, they do... I think Kersis did struggle today. He did struggle, and he actually picked up a booking, I think, and he couldn't get into the pace of the game. But I think Harvey Elliott and Cody Gakpo did well, especially Harvey. He comes on and he sort of just steadies things down and dictates the play, really. And like Tom said, for a young lad, he's got a hell of an old head on his shoulders. And it would have been lovely for him to get the winner because, as I say, he's come on in the last few. He hasn't started the last few games, but when he's come on, the cameos he's given, he's been really good, you know. But, yeah, it's at the end of the day, you know, when the dust settles and I wake up tomorrow and blah, blah, I could think that might be a decent point at the end of the season. But the way I feel at the minute, we've just let United off the hook. And especially with the other two winning yesterday, it would have been a statement to go to Old Trafford, because even though they're not the best United side we've seen for a long time, at least if you go to Old Trafford and get a win in such a big game, because they'd do anything to stop us winning the league, it would have made a good statement, and it would have just made Arsenal and City sit up a bit. But as it is, it's not a total disaster. Level on points with Arsenal, although we're not going to catch them on goal difference. So there's a lot more games. You know, there's 7 games to play, and I was looking at some of the fixtures, and we've all got tricky fixtures to come, you know, the three of us. So, you know,
we'll discuss that in a minute, Pete. But yeah. I just wanted to ask you and Tom really a question, really about Darwin Núñez. You know, we're all massive fans of Darwin. Do you think he's looking a little bit tired, Tom? Because he, over the last sort of, say, 3 games that we've played against Brighton, Sheffield United, and then today, he hasn't been at his chaotic, energetic best, has he? You know what I mean? And like, I just wondering whether the sort of exertions of the season are starting to take the toll on him a little bit. I mean, I don't think he's being poor in those games. I just don't think he's being his normal, chaotic, energetic self.
There was an instant there, what you talk about, Les, when he got away, and from the young full, the young centre back who played his first game at Old Trafford today, and he caught him, didn't he? And then you think, well, that's unusual. If Núñez gets away like that, he's away, isn't he? There's no catching him. Maybe he's still got the effects of that. The injury he had, Les, you know, like, we don't know. Maybe Cody will start on Thursday, and that'll be the difference. That'll give him a little rest, because he plays nearly every game, doesn't he? It's the same with Diaz. You know, like, I agree with what Peter said. I think had Diaz has scored, I think they would have disallowed that by VAR, even though I don't think there was nothing in it.
Yeah.
But they, by the letter of the law, and with it being Taylor and the other clown in the VAR, then, you know, to be honest, I wouldn't have expected them to give it.
If he was going to give a foul for that one on the edge of the box,
Jesus Christ,
didn't get within a foot of Manu. You know what I mean? He would definitely give a foul for that if he'd have been asked to go and see it again when, there's two hands touching the, Anthony. But yeah, Pete, what do you think of Núñez? You know, we're all big fans of saying, not a criticism of him. Do you just think maybe he's feeling a little bit of fatigue?
He probably is, because the last few games, like Tom said, the front three have picked themselves, because he hasn't got... I think if Jota had been fit, there'd have been games where Núñez would have been on the bench, even possibly Diaz, and we could have rotated it a bit. But because Jota's been out, I think he's going to get the nod before Gakpo's start. So it could well be that when we play on Thursday, that Gakpo might come in and leave Núñez on the bench, but I'd have left them on today, not because we've only drawn the game and it's hindsight, but it's like you say, he's so capable of causing chaos in the back of any opposing defence. I think I'd have kept him on, just for the nuisance value, if nothing else. But yeah, he probably does look a bit jaded at times, but he puts so much work, and some people just look at stats and say, oh, he didn't score or he didn't do that, but he put so much work in. I mean, he got the assist today for the first goal, but he put so much work in for the closing down,
I
and
mean,
it works for the team. I think he could well just need a rest for the next game. Yeah.
yeah, to be fair as well, Tom, we haven't created a bundle of chances for him. And again, does this come back to again what we were discussing about earlier on in the pod? Where if you think about it, earlier on in the season, we were going on about how many chances Nunes was missing. Right. Now today, if you compare Mo to Nunes, Mo had about five chances. You can only name really that one that Nunes had. The one where we had the debate on whether he should, you think he should have scored. I don't think he had the opportunity. I thought it was a bad pass. But both of us are probably right somewhere along the line. It's probably a mixture between the two. But do you see what I'm getting is there wasn't one attempt there where you thought, there was one where the ball bounced out to him and he hit it really well and it hit the bloody bollard in Harry Maguire, didn't it? You know what I mean? He made a good block, to be fair, and he hit that really well. But there wasn't a clear-cut chance created for him. When the goal he scored, against Sheffield United was for his work rate and closing down on the keeper. And you can't remember him having too many against Brighton either.
He had a cracking shot in the first half, didn't he? Which just went over the bar. Like in the first half, he's just screaming. He was really unlucky. But as you say, he made that himself by running onto it. But that's the difference with him, isn't it? But as you say, we're not creating. As you say, the 29 chances, he hasn't missed the most of the 29 chances. He's only missed a few, hasn't he? Really, by his own standards, I think the ball's into the box, as Peter said before. The balls into the box were poor, and the passing in, we 9 times out of 10 we were hitting, we were under it there, or we were hitting the defender, which is so unlike Liverpool. Maybe I might look at it from the other points of view of with it being a pressurized game, because this was the game. Even I built myself up with this with pressure. I was sort of saying, well, if we win this game today, we've got Bacetic, we've got Jota, we've got Trent coming back to training on Monday. So they're going to be by Crystal Palace. We could have one or two or even three of them back. And so you were just thinking, we just got to get over this game today. So maybe the players have done that themselves today and put undue pressure on themselves. I don't know. Maybe I'm just... But I know we're going to talk about how we see the rest of the season in a minute. But you know what, Les? I always thought that 92 points will win us the title. And I'm still sticking to 92 points will win us the title. I put down that we'll drop points against Tottenham probably when we've done that little thing. Maybe we'll beat Tottenham, and that's the draw today if we win the rest 7 games with everyone coming back. Who knows, So that point could be, while we're all devastated at this moment, we've dropped 2 points against these. In the long term, who knows with the football gods how it's going to play out.
We'll discuss that in a minute, Tom, in more detail. But before I do, I'll go to Pete and ask him for his player of the match.
I think it's going to be an obvious one again, but I'm trying to think of notable mentions as well. I think it's a bit strange sometimes saying that someone who influences the game, who comes on with 15 minutes ago, but I thought Elias out of the subs that came on was fantastic today. But I thought throughout the 90 minutes, once again, McAllister showed his class. He never gets flustered in possession, and he's always prompt, and there was just a just a little bit disappointed, really, that he didn't have a shot in the bag from like the other night. But I'd give it to Alexis again.
Tom?
Well, I had four today, Les. Like, as when I say four, it was like I picked out VH because I thought, although like I thought, but they didn't really create a great deal of chances for all the play that they had. And I thought Virgil played really well today. I felt sorry for Kwanzaa, and I think, you know, like he'd become a better player for this. He done quite well today.
Hey, Tom, I thought just while you're talking about Kwanzaa, I thought he showed good character after that mistake
Most
because
certainly did, Les.
he dealt with everything that was put in front of him after that mistake, never let his head drop and never let it affect his game. And for such a young player in his first season, you know, in such a big and important game, it would have been easy, wouldn't it, for him to go to pieces after that and sort of. But sometimes, you know, we found out a little bit more about him after that mistake, if you like, because he showed, didn't he? He made a mistake and it never let him affect him for the rest of the game. So fair dues to him for that.
Yeah, I agree with that, Les, 100%. As I said, so like he was, you know, like he'd done well. I thought Lucio overall, I know he missed a couple of chances, but like he was a threat throughout the game as he's been all through the last couple of weeks. I thought a notable exception mention for Harvey Elliott because I think I love this kid, I really do. And I think, you know what, he's going to grab it through hard work and effort. He's going to grab a place in this midfield somewhere along the line because he's such a young player. I think he's a tremendous player. But I'm like Peter, I'm going to give it to Alexis because I thought out of all of the players on the pitch, he was the one player that showed composure when we needed it. I thought Endon was quiet today, Les, as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a strange one when you're talking about man of the matches because, like, I totally agree with what both of you have said there. I thought it was between three people. I thought it was between Virgil, Harvey Elliott for the impact he had when he come on, and Maka. But one thing I do want to say that I meant to say during our look back at the match, and it was, you know, we mentioned Szoboszlai earlier. And once again, I thought again, when he went off, it showed what we missed, if you see what I mean, rather than what we gained. And I think again, you know, had we kept him on, although we criticised him from bit for, you know, getting the pass wrong at the and you know it's in passing sometimes instead of shooting, he was getting in those positions to make that pass or have that shot. And when he went off, we didn't have anybody getting in those positions to do that. And I thought we, although, you know, he wouldn't, he's not in my sort of shout for the man of the match. I just thought we missed him when he went off. You might disagree with that, but that's what I thought. That's what I
No, I
thought.
agree with that, Pete. I agree with that, Les.
You know what I mean? Because I thought at the time, just divert back a little bit. That when he did go off and Curtis come on, right, you know, the Curtis would have started driving forward, but Curtis was sort of, as you said before, it was though the game was too quick for him. Whereas Boz was just driving forward. And when he went off, we just didn't have anybody doing that. And if you remember near the end, Cody did it once. And nearly went through a lot of them, and he got taken out, didn't he, by Mason Mount? You know what I mean? And I do think we missed that from our midfield when he left the field. But anyway, going back to me, player of the match, like you two, it's going to be Maka because he was just class all the way through. Now, Pete, I want to ask you touched on it before. You know, now the league effectively, or you know, possibly isn't in our own hands anymore. I suppose it is because it's in our hands how many goals we score each game. So, you know, Liverpool have got to go out now with the and something going to put to you both, and it'll be interesting to see. I've been thinking about this while we've been doing the podcast and after the match. Do you think all of a sudden, you know, when you are at the front and Arsenal, you know, are now at the front with 7 games to go, and all of a sudden people are saying it's in their hands. Do you think that expectation could affect them over the coming weeks? Because all of a sudden, they've now gone from playing and thinking, right, we need to put pressure on Liverpool now. To right, we're now favourites, and we play now before them again next weekend. We kick off on the early game on the Sunday. They kick off late against Aston Villa. So do you think that the pressure of being in the lead might affect them a little bit?
I think it could, because you could probably say some of the decision making today by ourselves was because we didn't have to win, because it's not the last game of the season, but it was then the ball was in our court to win, to go back to the top of the league. And it does put undue pressure, and maybe that's why some of the decision making when we created good opportunities, maybe that's why it happened. Maybe it was in the back of all the players' minds. Oh God, we've got to get these 3 points in that. So if we can beat Palace next week, we can beat Palace next week prior to the Arsenal game, it might just affect them. And it comes a few days after they play Bayern Munich, and Bayern Munich have only got this trophy to go for now. Bayern Munich lost again yesterday. And what's the name? Leverkusen won, and it's more or less tied the league up. So this is the only thing really that they've got left to go for, Bayern Munich, I think. I think they're out of the domestic cup as well. So depending on the results, I think the first game is in London against Bayern Munich. Depending on that result, I think it could be. Maybe some players and some teams like the chase, rather than being ahead of the chase and having to keep looking over your shoulder. So it could well put a bit of doubt in the mind if we can beat Palace and go back to the top and see how they get on against the Villa, you know.
Yeah, how do you see it, Tom? Do you think that could be a factor now where, all of a sudden they've got the targets on the back, so to speak? And yeah, it's great having it in your own hands, but sometimes you can play without maybe too much fear when you're not at the top. And the Arsenal haven't won the league for 20 years, so it could be now that all of a sudden the fans will be feeling a bit like we've been feeling in the last week. All of a sudden, well, if we win all our games now, we could actually be champions. And that again creates anxiety, doesn't it? Especially if you don't get an early goal in some games, as we've found out over the last two games at Anfield.
Yeah, it's always, do you always say that, Les, don't you? It's easier to be the chaser than it is to be the leader. And as you say, the pressure's on them, isn't it? Now they're going to be the team that everyone wants to knock off. And if we're putting pressure on them, there's going to come a time when Arsenal don't score a goal. I know they didn't score against Manchester City, but I don't think they tried to be honest. But I think there's going to be a time when they're going to throw everything at a team and they're just not going to score. It's going to happen. It happens to every team, even Manchester City. Even us with the ball of players we've got, that there will come a game. And the more pressure that you've got on you, the more likely that is. Peter makes a great point there. In between the two cup competitions, you wonder now whether Bayern are saving players to play in the Champions League rather than resting players, because the league's gone, hasn't it, really? They're about 12 or 15 points ahead, aren't they, Peter?
They're way behind. I watched the game, not the whole game, but they had a rerun on Sky last night, and they were two up, I think, by coasting. And this team, they were playing Heidenheim or something. They're just like a little team, not too far from Munich, but a little provincial team. And they just played with so much gusto and so much energy. And then they turned it around and beat Bayern 3-2. And the
Is it Heidelberg?
Heidenheim, I think they're called.
Yeah.
And it's not too far from Bayern. But some of the chances that Bayern Munich were missing, if you think we're profligate in front of goal, Harry Kane could have scored five or six himself, and he was skewing them wide and stuff. And Musiala and people like that, and you were just missing chances that you didn't expect. But once again, like I say, their ship might come in. Pardon me, their ship might come in against Arsenal, and you just wonder what an adverse result against Bayern Munich might do to them at home to the Villa, because we found it difficult trying to go for four trophies in one season ourselves, and little by little, you just find that, you know, the players tired and things happen in games. Like Tom said, you know, there's going to be times where Arsenal are going to be knocking on the door and possibly don't score, you know. So it'll be interesting to see how it transpires against Bayern Munich, because I think, as I say, this is the only trophy they've got to go for now. And it's quite ironic when Harry came and everyone was saying, you know, he's only gone to Bayern Munich to guarantee medals, and up to now, I don't think they've won anything, have they? I don't think they've won like a cup
No.
or anything. Yeah, but they created chance after chance against this Heidenheim, and as it turned out, they took the chances on the break, and so be it, you know. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. But looking at the, you know, Arsenal have got some, we've all got tough games, we've all got seven left, but Arsenal have got to go to Wolves, which is never a given, and they've got to play Chelsea and Tottenham, and they've got to go to Old Trafford. And then last game of the season, they've got the mighty Everton, and if Everton are fighting for it, I think by then, I think Everton will know the fate, whether they stay up or down anyway. But if Everton need to get something the last game of the season, they are capable of frustrating teams.
Yeah, Tom. So, you know, I think the next week is going to be, is sort of the next two league fixtures are going to be telling for Arsenal, because they've got Aston Villa at home, and then they've got Tottenham away. You know, in between the two European ties. So that's going to give them a big indication of where they are when they come out of those two games in the same period of time. You know, Liverpool have got Crystal Palace at home and Fulham away, you know, either side of Atlanta. And then Manchester City, I think, have got Luton at home, either side of Real Madrid. And then they've got the FA Cup semi-final against Chelsea. Against Chelsea. So, you know, although the second game won't affect, you know, the league position, you know, the league form, really. You know, it is going to be an interesting how the league table looks coming out of that weekend in a couple of weeks. So as things stand now, I don't want you to let your heart overrule your head here. I'll ask the same question to Pete, and then I'll let you know how I'm feeling. Are you still confident as you were before today's game, that, you know, to come, you know, Sunday the 19th of May, Jürgen's farewell, that we'll be crowned champions?
Yeah, of course, you level on points. It's all to play for, Les, isn't it? There's going to be plenty of twists and turns. You know, like the football gods decide who wins the league. Like, lots of things can happen. A couple of injuries to Arsenal players. You know, like, they've been quite lucky with injuries this season. You know, like, in football's a funny game. You know, like, it's... So, yeah, I did believe we'd need to win like 9 out of the 10 games. And, you know, like, I'm still of the same opinion. We've dropped the points against Man United. Well, maybe that'll be it. You know what? Getting Trent back and Ali back is going to make a big difference to Liverpool Football Club. So, like, in the running, these players are have all got a part to play, haven't they? So, who knows? You know, I'm still pretty confident. I'm not 100% confident, because you can be, you know, none of us know. But
I mean, nobody can be 100% confident. You're quite right what you're saying there. But the question I'm asking you, are you as confident as you were when you woke up this morning? Or has your confidence dropped a little bit following that?
No, not at all. Not at all. It could be there's lots of times in football when I've looked at games and think, Jesus Christ, you know, that's 2 points dropped. And it turns out, you know, that point was a really valuable point. You know what I mean? There's lots of football still to play. So yeah, there's lots of twists and turns before the end of the season. And yeah, I'm still as confident.
You, Pete, just mention something to you that's just come to me when, you know, Tom's been talking there about, you know, the football and gods will decide. I remember in 1986 when we did the double, and Kenny had brought himself back into the team, and you'll remember this. And we'd started winning, and then Liverpool played away at Sheffield Wednesday, and he left himself out. And Liverpool ended up drawing the game 0-0. And everybody thought that decision had basically cost us the league, because we, you know, in everybody's eyes, we needed to win every game. And then Kenny brought himself back into the team again for the game after. And the footballing gods were with us, because Everton unexpectedly lost at Oxford. We won at Leicester and eventually went on to win the league. So Tom's right, isn't he, with regard to the footballing gods? But I just wondered how you're honestly feeling. Are you as confident that we will, you know, we will crown Jürgen's last season with the league title? Or has your confidence dropped a little bit now to what it was before kickoff?
No, it's not really dropped. I mean, you look at the table, and as I say, we're not gonna match Arsenal for goal difference unless there's a real disaster or something, or, you know, we score a hatful of goals or something in two or three games, as they've done, actually. That's what they've done. So you look at the table and the level on points. I think if we'd have lost, I'd have been a lot more downcast than I am. I'm just more frustrated today than anything else for the fact that we had it in the palm of our hand, and once again, for whatever reasons, we let it drop. Yeah, I'm still confident. There's a lot of games to go. I mean, if you look at the running of the three, you probably think City's got the easier one, or the easiest running. But they've still got to go to Brighton. But I expected Brighton to give Arsenal a game last night, and he sort of fell away. They've still got to play Spurs, which I don't think has been rearranged yet. They've still got to play Tottenham. And obviously Arsenal have got some big games. They've got Chelsea and they've got Arsenal in their running. Chelsea and Spurs and they're running. So there's a lot to happen, and we've just got to keep plugging away. I said when we did our forecast program, I said we had to win. I think at the time we had 10 games left, and I said we'd only draw one game, and that game was at Goodison. And I still fear for that, because they would do their utmost to. That's going to be an ugly football game against Everton. It's not going to be nice at all. So we've just got to pull our socks up, and we've just got to look after ourselves and dust ourselves down from today. And obviously we've got a little break now with the Atalanta game, but come Crystal Palace, because they're not going to be easy to overcome, Crystal Palace. So come the game next Sunday, we've got to make sure we get, you know, the 3 points. And we've just got to look after ourselves. And then, as I say, whatever happens with the other two teams happens. But I don't know, I'm still confident yet. I'm still happy in the position with him with 7 games to go, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, when we did our 10, I predicted actually that Liverpool would drop points today, but would still go on to win the league. So I'm hoping that my prediction comes true. With regard to the, you know, to the goal difference, it's when you look at Liverpool, when you look at the remaining fixtures that Liverpool have got, you know, first and foremost, you know, it's about Liverpool getting the points right. But when you look at the opposition, you know, you could, you know, as we've said, and I'm not saying this is going to happen, but you're looking at who we've got to play, and you think to yourself, you know, Liverpool could easily win, you know, 3 of those games by 4-0. You know what I mean? They're all games where you could score a lot of goals if everything went in your favour. But there are also games where you could just win them 1-0 or 2-1. You know what I mean? So it is, you know, there is the prospect there, you know, of getting a bag full of goals. Because if you think about it, Arsenal scored 6, you know, at West Ham, didn't he? You know what I mean? And you don't know which West Ham's going to turn up. I mean, Fulham conceded 3 to Sheffield United. You know, so you don't know which.
But this,
turn
At
up.
this
And
precise,
I
at this, yeah, at this precise moment, that's like 7-1 nils
yeah,
comfortably.
exactly. And I totally agree with you, but that's what I'm saying, Pete. There's the potential there for them to be 1-0, 2-1s, but there are also potentials for Liverpool to do what they did against, you know, the likes of Brighton and Bournemouth and suddenly win by four.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what
Yeah.
I mean? But
but we
yeah.
don't want to fall. We don't want to fall into that trap that we did when we had bloody Crystal Palace. Where I'll be honest, I bought into that. I thought we'd get about 7 or 8 that night after we went 3-0.
That was Brendan the fraud, though, wasn't he? Because like I could have understood that if like Manchester City had played Aston Villa the night before and had just won 1-0, and then Brendan had thought, well, you know, if we can beat, Crystal Palace. 6-0 or something, you know what I mean? Then all of a sudden, you know, we might only need to score 2 more than City on the last day to win the league. But we were playing the night before, City were playing against Villa, so it just didn't add up what he tried to do. But that was Brendan for you. But we just diverted a bit there. But yeah, I'm disappointed like you lads are, but I'm still as confident as I was before. As Tommy said, because I think the footballing gods are going to be with us this season and see us over the line. So I've got everything crossed that that's going to happen. Just before we move on and Pete gives us his prediction of the start lineup for Thursday, just like to pass on condolences to the family and friends of Joe Kinnear, the former Tottenham fullback. And you know, more younger fans will remember him as managing Wimbledon and Newcastle, who's passed away today, aged 77, after a battle with dementia. So a decent fullback in his day, Tom. You know, played for Tottenham, during the 70s and the Republic of Ireland international. You know, be sorely missed by especially, you know, the Tottenham fans of our generation who watched him play.
Yeah, he's a decent player, Les, wasn't he? And like he was a decent manager with Wimbledon as well, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he'd done quite well for them. You know, like sad to hear that he had dementia as well. It's so sad. You know, yeah. But I think the younger generation, it's a name that they might have heard of from years gone by. Like, but people who saw the lad play, he was a really decent player in a really good Tottenham side at the time.
Yeah, he was. Pete, he's another player from the 70s who we grew up watching, who's being taken too soon.
Yeah, they had a good side, Spurs in the 70s. Yeah, but I remember joking here. Yeah, always. my memory might be faded, but I always thought he was like the type of fullback who came off the pitch as clean as he went on. He's quite elegant as a player, and with Tottenham having the white shirts and that, he hardly ever got rotten dirty, you know. But he was a footballing fullback, wasn't he? He played nice football as well. He wasn't just a stopper. He was a good footballer. So, yeah, they mentioned it today, weren't they? The Spurs game is on, so condolences to all Tottenham and the Kinnear family, yeah.
Peace. So, we move on, and you'll never walk alone, Joe, anyway, and our thoughts are with your family and friends at this sad time. So, we look ahead to Thursday, and what have you come up with after your success of getting the complete team right for today's game? What have you come up with for
I've got quite a few either ors. I think there will be changes, obviously. I think Kells will start in goal. Pardon me. I've got the back four. I've got Gomez at right back, Canasi, Van Dijk, and Kostas coming in at left back. Midfield, this is where it gets complicated. I've put Endo and Maka down to start, but I've put one of three from Jones, Szoboszlai, but I think Elias might get a nod, you know, to start. And then up front, I put Salah, Diaz, and I'd probably go with you and think Gakpo might get a start ahead of Nunes just to give him a rest.
Tom, what are you going for?
I wouldn't disagree with that side. I think Harvey Elliott deserves a shout. He might go with Curtis as well, you know, but I think he more or less go with Endo. And I don't know. I think Maka might be in need of a little rest soon before he's playing every game, isn't he?
Good point.
So
that,
might be
Tom.
Szoboszlai.
Or Curtis could start instead of Maka.
Yeah, I think I'd be surprised if he went with Curtis and Harvey. I think he might go with Harvey and Szoboszlai and leave out, you know. I think Harvey deserves his place, to be honest. But I think it's more likely to be Szoboszlai and Endo if he I think he's gonna need a rest soon.
Yeah.
Playing every game.
I think it'll be Endo, Elliot and Jones will start in midfield on Thursday to give Maka and Szoboszlai a rest for the game against Crystal Palace on Sunday. I think Liverpool will have learnt the lesson with Szoboszlai in not overplaying him, where they overplayed him last time, and that's where he tweaked his hamstring. And I think Liverpool won't want any more injuries, you know, between now and the end of the season. And I also think that Trent, Jota and Alisson will all be back in the squad, if not for Thursday, then certainly for next Sunday.
What do you think about Bacetic, Les?
I don't know. I think Bacetic might be for the second leg, maybe against Atlanta, but we shall see. So, Pete, what are you going for your prediction on Thursday?
I'm hoping that we're a bit more decisive in front of goal. So, I know Atalanta lost today. They lost 2-1 away. But they're sort of pressing in their own their domestic league for a European place. So it depends how they view this game, whether they make a few changes themselves. But I'd go for a 2-0 win for Liverpool.
Tom, what are you going for?
That's what I was thinking, 2-0. I think it's going to be a lot. I think it'd be tight. It'd be a lot harder, I think. So, yeah, I'm going for 2-0.
Yeah, I think full house, I'll go for 2-0 as well for the Reds. And on that note, on a disappointing day for Liverpool, but not, you know, a day that will end our pursuit of our dream. You know, we'll end this edition of the Leaf Flag. As you always say, justice for the 97. You'll never walk alone, and don't buy the sun. Thanks to Tom and Pete for joining me tonight, and see you all next time. Don't lose the faith. There's still a league to be won, and we're in there fighting. See you all soon.